This is the FCB Radio Network, home of the best personalities and where real talk lives. Online at FCBRadio.com. FCB.
This is NAP, not another political podcast.
They can't take it no more. We've been silent for too long.
On the FCB Radio Network.
And we are back, not another political podcast. You are in the NAP, episode 23. As always, I am your host, Colin Jackson, here with my number one brother, co-host, and extraordinaire on the podcast game, Alex Harp. How you going, Harp?
Man, feeling great, man. Feeling great. Just got back from Florida, so that's fantastic.
Nice. Oh, yeah. Shout out to Florida. And as always, shout out to all listeners of Not Another Political Podcast, wherever you may be, whether you're listening on Apple, Spotify, or our favorite iHeartRadio. Please give us those 5 stars. Ratings and those comments, because if you don't give us 5 stars, where are we going to think, Harper?
That you are a hater.
That's right. So, Harp, I'm going to get right into it with segment one here, man. So you was in Florida for what exactly? Why were you in Florida?
I was in Florida for CPAC that I did not realize was such a huge deal until I got there. So call me naive, but I had no idea CPAC was as big as it was, but it was great. I had a great time and I can't wait to talk about it and fill you in because my co-host, the great Colin Jackson, decided he wanted to stay in Cleveland in the cold. So thank you for that, Colin. Let me go ahead and have free reign for the NAP and represent for the NAP in Florida.
What can I say? In the great words of Machine Gun Kelly, it's the land till I die, CLE till I die. It's hard to get me out of here. But no, man, tell me about CPAC. Tell me the high of CPAC and tell me what your low of CPAC was. I know you was out there with the family, but more about the actual CPAC, you know, kind of sessions and things of that nature.
Man, I'm going to be honest, because I went in with no expectations, again, my ignorance. When I got there, it was great, all of it. Like, I was just happy it was a lot of people. I had a lot of great conversations. I even had spoke about it with Kira, the auntie Kira Davis was there. She was great.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole FCB network was family was there, except Colin, of course. And we got a chance to kick it. So that was cool. Some of the sessions, it's funny because I've never seen so many Karens in one place.
Okay.
And they were so they were so comfortable around each other that the conversations were like it was extremely interesting. Like, not offensive, but like extremely interesting. Like, when you hear people that were actually in those school board meetings standing up, right, talking about critical race theory and all those type of things, and then see them in person and they still feel how they felt that night, like they still got that same sort of passion. It was cool. And then I got to see 45 speak. And listen, that is a cult. 45 has a cult behind them. And I don't care what anybody else says. I don't know if that's the politically correct term, but I watch people wait 5 hours in line to get in the building just to wait for him another 5 hours to come on stage for 45 minutes.
No, I would definitely say that President Trump definitely has a following of people who are definitely dedicated to him and what his agenda is. I would like to know, though, you talk about the people at CPAC. I always think that's really interesting, right? You see Republicans on television all the time on different news outlets, and they're always really mean and angry. And sometimes, you know, you look at those images, and even me, I feel like those are people that I would not be comfortable around. Can you kind of tell me what the overall feel was? Were people welcoming? I mean, you're also a young black man in CPAC. What was that overall feeling like?
And I was full young black man at CPAC. I was full polo shorts, Air Force Ones, picking my hair. Like,
sometimes Harper was walking around like a correspondent from the Daily Bongo. It was not okay.
Listen, it was okay. It was great. It was great because you had everybody in. So the reason I felt like extremely comfortable, and it was only about, I don't know, say 100, 150 black people there. I don't know. It was probably more, but I'm just, it looked like 150 out of 4,000. But the reason I was actually so extremely comfortable is because, like, you could really have a conversation. Like, I had a conversation with two black women from that were in their 70s from Harrisburg in a Starbucks line that was intriguing. And then I had another conversation with a young Republican out of Vermont who was in a suit, a three-piece suit and MAGA hat and everything else. And then I had a conversation with a lady in a star-spangled banner, red, white, and blue corset with a cowboy hat on. And all of them were intriguing to hear the perspectives, to hear, just to hear the what goes into people's opinion. So sometimes we get so wrapped up in what the opinion is that you, don't really, that you don't really get to dig deep into how you reach that opinion or how you got to that point. And to that point, like the black women I spoke with, and I always bring them up because it was such a revelation to really just be sitting there and talking to them. And they're from deep South Alabama. Like my mother's from deep South Alabama. And so see how their journey mentally, how their journey got them to think conservative and kind of be on the Republican side. And then you see, like I said, the gentleman from Vermont who was clearly born Republican. Now, everybody I'm talking to is black. I tried to talk to every black person I could because there were so few of us. But the gentleman I talked to from Vermont, he was born and raised Republican. So his journey to get to this conservative mindset was completely different. So to see what goes into people's thoughts, man, it was great. And I don't want to say eye-opening because I don't want to seem that dramatic, but it was good because I know how I get to my conclusions and my reasoning and my line of thinking. So it was good to hear and talk to people that kind of have the same overall opinions and views and then to see what actually led them to those opinions and views. So it was great. The best part, though, I'm going to tell you what the best part was. Media credentials. Media credentials was, and I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to explain why. It wasn't just the fact that it was media credentials, but it gave me access to a lot of the sessions so I could hear even more different perspectives on different other hot topics or the buzz topics. And I even got a chance to sit in with, shout out Congressman Donalds out of Florida, but I got a chance to sit down with him at the Young Jewish Conservative Luncheon. And it was, again, because their reasoning for being conservative or having conservative mindset is completely different from a black man. Not completely different. I'm not going to say completely different, but it is somewhat slightly different because their background and everything else that goes into their culture, it goes into their day-to-day lives, is going to bring them to certain outcomes and conclusions. So it was even nice to be able to be there and just kind of walk in and hear these sessions and hear these different conversations from these different groups of people that I would have no other reason to be at a young Jewish conservative luncheon if had it not been, you know, because I was part of the media and I had an opportunity to cover it. So it was fantastic, man. You missed out. And I got a chance to talk to the Korean newspaper that I didn't even know existed. So that was great. That was awesome.
I just really think that CPAC is, again, and I'm glad you got to see those things and get in those conversations. It's a great opportunity to speak with other people, like you said, who may have the same conclusions as you, but have different walks of life. You know, I know this isn't this to be true across all politics. You know, not a lot of black people make their way to these political conferences. And actually, these conferences are kind of where the ideas that make it up to the leadership kind of start. Those grassroots movements. So that participation is extremely, extremely important for people participating in the process.
You know what surprised me? I'm gonna be honest of what I was surprised at, because I don't think I had a great experience. So I don't really have a bad thing to talk about. But what surprised me was just simply when you start having those, like, so when you start having a conversation with somebody, right? Because again, some part of CPAC is networking.
Big part of it.
Yeah, so part of CPAC is networking. So when you start to have these conversations, I started finding people that have been like canceled or quote unquote canceled. And it was, you know, you hear about it, but I don't know anybody personally. We always joke about, you know, I'm gonna get the show canceled. But anybody personally that actually got canceled, but I met a gentleman who was doing a documentary on, and we may interview him later on once the documentary gets done, but he's doing a documentary on January 6th. And
I'm surprised they even let podcasts go out that say the words January 6th anymore.
Very true. So that day. So I'm just start calling it that day.
Call it that day.
Yeah. So he's doing a documentary on that day. And it's so funny because he was like, man, I had 5,000 Twitter followers. It wasn't even like I just literally was just doing a documentary that was, it wasn't painting a favorable light, but it was pointing out some of the inconsistencies in the way that people are getting sentenced, the way people are kind of getting like isolated, those type of things of that participated in that day and who they were making to be the leaders and that type of thing. And I got an opportunity to speak with people that were there. So it was like, oh man, they really canceling people over their
political views. No. I'm trying to figure out a way to say this.
Be careful.
I'm trying to be very careful. We have to, in this world of so many ideas and the diversity of ideas, I think is just as important as any other diversity we have in our culture. If we're going to have a diversity of ideas, we have to agree where that diversity of ideas is allowed to exist. And I think right now what we're seeing is there are certain places where that diversity of ideas is not allowed. And in certain arenas, particularly in media, in social platforms, things of that nature, it seems like that those ideas aren't allowed to exist for the purpose of those platforms then telling you who those people are. And what I mean by that is, you know, those people you talk to at CPAC, you know, the elderly ladies, the guy from Vermont, even the guy you're talking about was January 6th, you know, or that day, I should say. That day, you know, I feel like there's a power that would like to tell their story for them, but would also very much dislike them having their own voice to say, no, it's not perfect. It's not the best thing, but it's the truth, right? This is my truth. And I don't think there's a space for that in some of these spaces. I think CPAC is one of those last kind of refuges for that kind of thought. And that's why I think so many people go every year.
Yeah. And that's the thing, because it's not so much that everybody's like-minded. Cause when I got back to Cleveland, people were like, oh, you just around a bunch of like-minded people. It was like, no, everybody's not like-minded, but it's the open and being welcome to the conversation. Because a lot of times you're in, especially when you have conservative mindset and conservative thoughts, people aren't welcoming to the conversation. They brush off the conversation entirely. I talked to people at CPAC, European and Black, and I didn't agree with everybody in every thought process. Like I said, critical. I talked to a lady from Critical that had a problem with critical race theory. So, you know, we clearly don't agree, but it was a welcoming conversation. It was an open conversation. And it was like, okay, well, we don't agree, but that's fine. And you don't necessarily get that everywhere, because of a conservative mindset. All conservatives aren't built the same. All Republicans aren't built the same. Just like all liberals or Democrats aren't built the same. And they don't all think the same. So it was nice to have that kind of space and arena to have those conversations openly and feel a little bit more comfortable or have other people feel comfortable having those conversations as well.
That's awesome, man. I'm actually really upset I missed that. But Colin had to stay here and work. Got a wedding to pay for. You are listening to Not Another Political Podcast, episode 23. It's our Jordan episode, Harper. Segment one, Not Another Political Podcast. See you on the other side.
These days, it seems like everybody's talking, but no one is actually listening to the things they're saying. Critical thinking isn't dead, but it's definitely low on oxygen. Join me, Kira Davis, on Just Listen to Yourself every week as we reason through issues big and small, critique our own ideas, and learn to draw our talking points all the way out to their logical conclusions. Subscribe to Just Listen to Yourself with Kira Davis and FCB Radio Podcast on Apple, on Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Not another political podcast. This is the NAB.
And we are back. Segment two, not another political podcast, episode 23. This is our Jordan moment. Harp, how does it feel? 23 episodes in. You just fresh from CPAC. We done had a whole bunch of life stuff happen in the span of 23 episodes. Where you at? Where you at? How you feeling?
I feel like this is the LeBron edition, man. I'm a LeBron guy, so this is the LeBron edition where we just gonna hit on a bunch of different topics and just be great at everything.
Steph Curry is best basketball player.
What
in the NBA? Period. I just need to say that for the sake of truth on this podcast. Further into segment two, we are discussing the judge who would be a Supreme Court justice. Ketanji Jackson. So Judge Ketanji Jackson is currently a judge on the appeals court of DC, which is kind of like what people call a Supreme Court junior. Other than being in a few court cases where she overturned some decisions in respect to President Trump's election and his presidency, she's had no juris problems. She's by all accounts a good judge. It doesn't seem like she has any personal issues, but the way she was brought into the limelight and brought into her appointment was through the door that is President Joe Biden. And Harp, you know how hard that can be when the bad guy brings you into the party. It's not going to go too well for you.
Yeah, and the timing in which he did it, like he literally announced it. The announcement was like right after Russia invaded Ukraine.
Right.
So even the timing of which he did it, but it's par for the course because he's been known to put black women in terrible, awkward situations, or going all the way back to Anita Hill.
So No, dude. I mean, you're right. I feel like Joe Biden used this black woman as a pawn, and it's really messed up to me because we knew his polling numbers had fallen into the low 30s. Inflation, all these things are going. And just like during the election, when Joe Biden gets in trouble, he reaches for the nearest black person he can find and rides them to popularity in the public discourse. And that's what he's using a real issue, which I'll talk about later, of justice and representation for his own political gain. And I just feel that's very, 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 very dangerous, especially to a black judge and the impact on her legacy. I don't know how you feel about that.
But yeah, and the problem is that it discredits the fact that she is probably actually good at her job.
Correct.
And that's the problem, because now we focus more on who appointed her, how she was appointed, the timing of her appointment, and then you get the comparisons to Amy Barrett.
With
Trump's appointment. So it becomes disingenuous because it's a disservice to her. Because in actuality, I'm going to be honest, I don't really know too much about her and her voting history and that type of thing. But I'm already on the side of skepticism. Not me. I'm not me per se. But you have groups of people. You have those that are already opposing her and looking for ways to poke holes in her political career. And again, it's the same thing that happened with Amy Barrett in 2020. So it's not as if this is new, but you're putting a black woman under the gun unnecessarily.
And
that's where the problem lies.
I completely agree. And then, you know, you talk about the political element of this, and that's the nature of how we appoint people to the Supreme Court. I mean, in Ohio, we elect our judges. We're one of the few states that do that. On the federal level and Supreme Court, you know, you get appointed. So that's always going to be a part of the process. The interesting part for a conservative, I think, to be aware of on the Supreme Court, where I was looking for the balance and the decisions. Well, you know, Judge Jackson would be replacing Justice Breyer, which is basically replacing a liberal vote for a liberal vote. So there's really no issue with the swap there. Interestingly enough, a lot of Republicans, because of the way Joe Biden introduced this topic of appointing a black woman to the Supreme Court, jumped at this and called it racism and dividing the country and all of those things. But Chuck Grassley, actually in the Senate, had a different perspective and said, don't fall into that trap. And if you're going to criticize this nominee, do it in a way that talks about the way she does her job and in a way that doesn't make it seem like you're targeting her for being a Black woman. And I really need to applaud him for doing the job that Joe Biden should have done, right? If Joe Biden brings this Black woman into the process because she is a good jurist and not because she is a Black woman, and that's the only reason I'm picking her, there wouldn't have been so much picking on her, I would say, out of some of the right wing media or just the right of the aisle. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, but it and again, it's because. So when you come out before you make the nominee and say, even before the position is open, honestly, even in your campaigning of, I'm going to put a Black woman on the Supreme Court, it's like you're already narrowing the candidate pool. So you're already saying, I'm not going to take the best candidate for Supreme Court judge. I'm going to just put my name in the history books as putting a Black woman in this position. And I'm not even saying I don't even want to see a Black woman in this position, because I do. I'm more so saying the fact that when you come out with a statement like that ahead of time, it automatically discredits it, because to those that want to criticize, you're giving them ammunition before you even give them a target. So
correct.
So you're saying I'm gonna put a Black woman here, immediately it's like, well, what if she's not the best qualified? Well, what if you're just trying to force a Black woman into a position? And then and it's probably the case, like, again, I don't have a problem with it, because there have been Europeans that have been pushed in positions for decades, centuries. But the moral of the story is, from a logical standpoint, when you take the emotional part out, the logical standpoint is that you're setting her up to be criticized before she's even in that position, whether or not she will do a good job in that position. And it's similar to what he did with the vice presidency, when he was like, I'm gonna have a black female vice president. So now you're not presenting two or three candidates. You're like, I'm just gonna get if you had two or three candidates and one of whom was a Black woman.
Right.
Chose that Black woman, then I can respect the decision more.
And what I think, you know, the biggest thing in what you're saying is that we're both acknowledging that, you know, we need Black judges. We need Asian judges. We need all types of people to be a part of the system in every level. Okay, well, so let's make that clear. And we also need Black judges on the right side of the aisle, which I bring up as much as I can, living in Cuyahoga County. I mean, we live in a state where there's only 56 judges across the entire state of Ohio. And in Cuyahoga County, where we're represented almost entirely by Democrats, we have 34 common pleas judges, and we have 30 of them which are white. So only 4 of them are Black. So I think in order for us to have a perception of justice, it is required of us to have representation. And we need to be okay with that. With all of that being said, Joe Biden has yet again marred another Black woman's legacy and accomplishment and, you know, struggle. I mean, she is the first public defender that will ever be on the Supreme Court. That means a lot. That means a lot for a lot of young lawyers who aspire to do something within this field. This is important. And so for the President of the United States to use that immensely important moment in American culture as something to rise his sinking poll numbers. Right. I'm sorry, Joe Biden. Black women can't be held responsible to save your presidency. But if it's up to you, I feel like he's going to try to ride them into a 2024, win without anything to show for it. So oh, no, I don't know.
He's absolutely going to use the fact that he does it now with Kamala. So it's not even like, you know, it's not anything that's, you know, foreign to him, or, you know, he's morally above. So we know he's going to do it. But again, the problem that I see is that history is not going to view this woman as, you were qualified and you were put here to be here. History is going to view her as, you were Joe Biden's appointee, Just and again, a similar way that they're gonna view Amy Barrett in a similar light, not the same, in a similar light as far as being a woman and being appointed by an unpopular president. So it's not gonna be in the same light. So I don't want to make that comparison because it's not, but it's in a similar light of just again tarnishing the legacy, tarnishing all the work that she's put in thus far to get to where she's at as far as for her, in her career.
And I think, you know, that's, again, I keep harping on this, but I think about you. I think about, you know, you're now a girl dad. You're a girl dad to a daughter who's going to be coming of age in a time where there's been a first Black president. There's been a first Black female president. There's been a first Black almost everything, you know. And here comes the story of a Black woman making it to the Supreme Court. No matter where you stand in politics, you know, that could be important for a kid. So what do you think your daughter is going to look at when she sees Ketanji Jackson's name with justice in front of it, which we expect to happen in the next couple of weeks?
So what I'm to be honest, what I'm hoping when she gets of age to know the historical significance of the Black woman on Supreme Court, hopefully it's to a point where she doesn't even realize the backstory doesn't matter. You know, and again, we know it just in politics and life in general, most times historical context never comes actually into play. So yeah. I'm hoping that that's the case in these type of situations too. The problem is that I can't guarantee that's the case, because right now in the event, again, because she's so scrutinized, if it turns into where she makes a mistake somewhere along the line, now I'm not gonna say she's gonna get kicked off because I don't even think that's possible.
No. But she's gonna catch a lot for it.
She's gonna catch a lot more flack than really she should. And that's where the problem is. And I want my daughter to see that representation. But I also am going to teach her as she grows up, because she's an infant now. But I'm also going to teach her that your merit and your work that you put in is more important than your skin color or your gender.
Correct. And that's what's important. Right. That is. And you know, I think you're right. You know, Supreme Court justices get scrutinized based upon their political appointment. You know, we talk about them in different revere. The way people talk about Clarence Thomas, the way people talk about Thurgood Marshall is different than they talk about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. It's the reality of how we appoint Supreme Court nominees. But with all that being said, the merit of these people to make it to that level should be applauded. It should be respected, and any criticism we have of them should be within that space of them being a just jurist. Call balls and strikes, political or not, but we are watching history develop in front of our eyes. Segment 2, Not Another Political Podcast. You're on the Nap.
This is Darvio Kingpin Morrow, co-host of the Outlaws Radio Show. And if you haven't heard our show before, check out this clip.
Jeffrey Toobin, he has quite the history behind him. Okay, so the New Yorker magazine star and the top CNN legal analyst, who is on leave from the network after being accused of performing manual labor in an online meeting.
Where did you jazz that up?
Wow.
Subscribe to the Outlaws Radio Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's OUTLAWS, the Outlaws Radio Show, an FCB radio podcast.
Not another political podcast. This is the NAB.
And we are back. Segment 3, Not Another Political Podcast. Thank you for listening. And if you can give us those 5-star reviews and those comments on whatever podcast platform you are listening on, whether that be Apple, Spotify, or our favorite iHeartRadio. Harp, we got to talk about the second most controversial mayor in the United States in March of 2022.
The second most?
The second most. I think the first would be, and would have to be, Mayor Lightfoot of Chicago. She was recently in some clubhouse trouble where she talked about her member in a particular way. She said she had the biggest member in the club. Great job marketing there, Democrats in Chicago. But she's the number one most controversial, but I want to talk about the number two. Who's the number two, Harper?
Eric Adams, New York.
Eric Adams, New York. Eric Adams, former officer who does not trust police officers, according to his top 10 controversies and contradictions around Eric Adams. Eric Adams is also the third Black mayor of the city of New York. He follows up Mayor de Blasio. So he is coming into being mayor at a very interesting time, not only in this country, but in New York, politically and otherwise. So Harp, I mean, we just had a young Black mayor here in Cleveland. What do you think about a Black person becoming mayor in the city of New York right now?
Now, I love Black people in positions. So let me start with that. Let me start with, I love Black people. I'm of the Wale mindset. I'm rooting for everybody that's Black, right? This is what I will say. And our producer, Darvio, made a good point. It's like your uncle becomes mayor, that one uncle that kind of that's always around the grill but have a few too many beers ends up becoming mayor of New York and starts telling everybody how he's felt about everything the entire time. And that's okay. That's kind of what I'm getting from Eric Adams.
So if you don't know what Harper is talking about, is Eric Adams, who is a Democrat. They say he was a Republican at some point. Maybe, I don't know. I think it's possible. But what progressives now, who in large part elected Eric in New York, are saying is that he gets in too much trouble. And what he means by that is he's been out there criticizing the minimum wage. He basically went on television, Harper, and I showed you this video, and basically said, you guys don't deserve $15 an hour. Not something you say to the progressives of New York. He also wants to crack down on crime. Imagine that in America, cracking down on crime being a bad thing. But he is also particularly blaming drill music. Harp, you listen to drill music?
I have no idea what drill music was.
All right, so drill music, for those who don't know, is a form of music that people play after or during drive-by shootings and acts of violence. So they literally keep score on the track. Like, I shot this guy, I shot that guy. Eric Adams is blaming drill music for the crime in New York. So much so, he actually had a meeting with the drill rappers.
And another thing, let me add this point too, is that I did read an article that it was named after Chicago slang word for kill.
Yeah. It's a drive-by. So Eric Adams had a meeting with those people. And then, of course, he's rolling back the mask and the vaccine mandates for the K-12s. Now, all of these things have put Eric Adams in a very interesting place. He is a Black Democratic mayor elected in a time post-COVID. And now those same progressives that elected him are angry with him for some things that seem like common sense issues. Harper, I want to know what you think about progressives turning on their Black candidates after they're elected.
No, it makes perfect sense, because I think it was a situation with him where either they didn't think he was going to get elected or didn't think he would start wilding like he did after he got elected. Like, it's one of the two. Somebody was surprised when he wasn't the one that was surprised. Somebody else was surprised at his behavior and his comments. Because even when you go back a little bit, because again, I didn't really know too much about him. I had heard about the press conference with the drill rappers and all that stuff, but I didn't really know too much about him. But he's been saying wild stuff for years. So either they thought they could control him or they thought he would settle down once he was actually in position of power, and neither is the case. So, I do want to shout out to Mano,
Shout out Mano.
Yeah, shout out Mano as the OG of kind of, I guess the trill rap music, Brooklyn trill rap music.
Drill,
excuse me. Yeah, whatever. Sue me. Anyway, the kind of the OG
respect of the culture, Alex.
I, That man, 45 years old. He shouldn't even be in that culture, but no worries, whatever. So, but he did set up the meeting for the local rappers or the Brooklyn rappers and the mayor to have a kind of sit down and understanding once the mayor kind of, I don't want to say put an assault on the drill music, because I feel like that's still too much. But once he kind of made it his purpose to kind of outlaw that version of music, to bring those rappers and the mayor together so they can have a sit down and an actual conversation about maybe kind of what misconceptions he may have and the art form itself. So I do want to shout out Mano for that, because that was big for the culture itself.
Look, I will say that Eric Adams is a mayor doing things that mayor should do. He's talking about crime. He wants to reopen the city and get kids going back to school and money flowing.
Free Kyrie.
Free Kyrie. And he's telling people a bit of the truth about what economics means in their city and what wages increases mean for employees. None of those things he should be criticized for. But what we're seeing here is the progressive left here putting someone who has common sense in a situation where they're the villain. I don't think Eric Adams is the villain. I don't think that in the last 3 months he's had a chance to really show people what can happen when you fully embrace his vision for order and prosperity. But what I do know is that the people who quote unquote said they supported him, being that white progressives in New York, no longer do. And that's unfortunate for doing nothing other than his job. And with that, we'll end segment 3, Not Another Political Podcast, episode 23. You're in the net.
The FCB Radio Network. First-class broadcasting worldwide.